Hello, and welcome to the Love Me A Vita podcast, sponsored by Fem Pharma. I'm Jerry DiPiano, founder and CEO. Thank you for joining us as we discuss all aspects of women's healthcare. Please note, this podcast is for educational purposes only. Always refer to your healthcare practitioner for personal advice. Well, Juliana Hauser, it's so nice to see you again, and welcome once again to the Love Me A Vita podcast.
Great.
Always have so much fun and learn so much from you. So Dr. Juliana Hauser is a psychologist and a sexpert, and Dr. Juliana has been a frequent guest. But for those of you that haven't had the pleasure of tuning in, Dr. Juliana, share a little bit about your background with our guests.
Yeah, well, I'm so happy to be back and always look forward to our time together. I am a twice licensed marriage and family therapist and licensed professional counselor and an expert within sexuality and menopause.
And she's so much more. She's also an author, and we'll talk about her book later on. So in case you're interested in getting a little bit more on Dr. Juliana Hauser, you can learn a lot about her by reading her book, A New Position on Sex. And we'll spend a couple of minutes at the end of the podcast. But today, Dr. Juliana and I are going to chat about something that is near and dear to a lot of women's hearts, not mine. My husband, in case he's tuning in, doesn't want to hear that I'm dating, but we're going to talk about dating. It's dating 2.0 and something called the hereafter. Funny that so little, you know, backstory here on why the hereafter, because we're not going to talk about religion. But when I was an undergraduate, I went to a very large Jesuit university. And one of my professors, who happened to be a Jesuit priest, took me to the side and said, you know, Jerry, this is in the context of dating and partnerships and whatever. He said, I think we need to have a conversation about the hereafter. And I thought, okay, he's a Jesuit priest. He's going to talk to me about spirituality, which was totally fine with me because I am very spiritual. But no, what he was talking about is agency, my agency, and determining what I was hereafter. And the expression he used was, you need to have this conversation with your prospective partner. If you're not hereafter what I'm hereafter, then you'll be hereafter I'm gone. And I thought about that, and it has actually served me well. Can you imagine? This is a long time ago.
Yeah. Beautiful.
But I never forgot, and I pray that he's still out there sharing his wisdom. But in any event, it served me well as I was dating as a younger person. And then as I've matured, obviously the hereafter has worked for me so far. Just saying, keeping my husband on his toes a little bit. But no, it has never been more important as we evolve, right? To kind of check in with ourselves. So today's podcast, it's really about dating 2.0 and the hereafter. So we are going through life transitions, and we may need different things. How should we be thinking about assessing what serves us and what doesn't?
Yeah, it's such a wonderful topic that is really finally getting the attention it deserves of like, what are we wanting at this point in our life? And I think that it begins with, well, who are you? And that question for a lot of women is in it's a start again. It's a thinking of like, who am I right now? And we've known this in like through psychology that this was a very typical time of life that you start doing a reassessment, that like in midlife, you have this, like the lot of life is behind you and you have been, and you're also living the consequences of a lot of your choices. And in some ways it feels like there's not a lot of life ahead. So it's like time to get at it and time to do the things that you want to do. And also there's a lot of life left. So the decisions that you make still have a lot of consequences. And so we've known that socially in psychology, and now we're learning the science behind it, that our brain is shedding things that we don't need. It's reorganizing, and part of the process of aging is helping us to take away the things that no longer serve us, or take away our tolerance for the things that no longer serve us. And that could be a whole variety of things. And some of that's relationships, whether it's friendships or romantic and sexual relationships.
You know, it's interesting. So when we think about relationships, and I know you and I have talked about connection, and we've talked about the importance of connections and so forth, but only in the context of having them feel right to us. And we talk about what serves us, what doesn't serve us well, and it does change. Excuse me, as we continue to mature, because let's face it. If you were partnered with someone, say in your 20s or 30s, you may have been in a very different phase of life from a career perspective, from the standpoint of having children, if you decided that that was something that the two of you wanted together. But perhaps as you have moved forward in life, those relationships, that relationship no longer serves you well. And that's a tough one. And I guess the question for me is, how does agency play into that decision to sort of move forward and make the change? Because it's got to be a challenge for those that are going through it or have gone through it.
So agency, in the way that I look at it, is it starts again with knowing who you are, so that you can make decisions that are based with purpose and intention on who you are, and really where you're heading. And it's enacting your voice. It is looking at the consequences of the decisions that you make. And it's about knowing that part of those consequences affect other people, that there are ripple effects to the decisions that you make, and that life isn't just about you. And I think that's a really, really crucial aspect of this time of life too, is to be able to say, who am I? What do I need, and what do I want? What serves me? What doesn't? And what does this mean for the people around me? And I think what could be, what I see is in an evolution for women is that a lot of women begin as people pleasers, and as making, like, deferring their decisions to other people or other authority figures. And then you get to the point that you're tired of doing that. You don't want to do that any longer. And so you go to this place of, like, entitlement or empowerment, that you like, I'm going to do what's right for me because I'm sick of doing everything for everybody else. And I think that that is a natural progression for a lot of people, but it has a stopping point. Because you get the backlash of not taking other people's thoughts into account, and you could truly scorch a village if all you're doing is thinking about yourself and what you need and what you want. But sometimes we have to swing the pendulum in order to get back, to the middle. But it you eventually do need to get back to the middle of thinking of others. And for me, that's where agency becomes such a superpower, that it doesn't discount your voice, nor does it discount others. It is a we decision, and that's complex. That's not an easy place to be, to not lose yourself and abandon yourself when you're making a decision, but also to not forsake others in that way of either deciding or enacting your decisions.
In your book, you say that agency is about me and boundaries are about me.
It's about we. Agency is
We.
about we, yes. And boundaries are about me, and agency is about we.
So maybe you can spend a little bit of time on boundaries, because when people think about boundaries, they may think about boundaries in the context of their children. If they have children, or boundaries in the context of their friends. But how about boundaries in the context of your partner?
Yes. So there's two kinds of boundaries. One is the boundaries that you have with others. That's where most people begin, which is like, you can't do this. Like, this is a no for me. You can't behave this way. And the second boundary is, I'm not going to put up with being treated this way. And when it's in a long-term relationship, one of the things that has to happen is that as you get to know yourselves and deepen your understanding of yourselves, some people grow together in that deep understanding, and how you know yourself and how you grow still works, and for other people it doesn't. And in that process is setting boundaries that respect what you need and what you want, and are communicated in a way that there is the consideration of, again, like I just said, about what it means for other people. And then there's just some boundaries that it's like, this is an absolute no for me. And when a couple sits with a very big difference, that's oftentimes when the relationship, that's what they come to me of, like, how do we get through this absolute no? It's a yes for me, it's a no for this person. What do we do when there's not a compromise? And for me, that's where boundaries go to another question, which is this a compromise for the relationship, or is this a compromise of your soul? And boundaries will often ask that question at some point in a relationship, and how you answer that makes a difference as to what happens to that relationship.
So the evolution that takes place with both figuring out that you have lost or sacrificed your agency and the absolute no in the boundaries, I'm guessing, isn't the at that intersection is probably the intersection where people say it's time to move on. It's
With
time to
that,
move on.
and I would say the another part of that, like, kind of brew, is how well do you communicate with each other? So I have seen couples navigate, like, come to that big decision making point, and they figure it out, and they either part, but they part with dignity, or they figure it out and they have a fulfilling relationship still. So it's not the difference, I don't think, is necessarily the biggest indication that it's going to end. It can, but what for sure happens is if you walk into that difference and you two do not have a good communication style, then it's going to be pretty impossible to navigate, because it's very complex. You have to have a very strong knowing of yourself in order to handle this, and you have to be able to hold space for your partner knowing themselves. And that those three things assume a lot, that two people know each other well, themselves well, and they know how to hold space for each other and that they have automatic goodwill for each other, and all of that has to be they are to be this, like, whoa, is that what I want for my life? Is that who I am? Is that who I am moving forward? And I think some of the hardest breakups that I've been a part of as a therapist are the ones that they love each other, they like each other, but they're very different people. And one person has made a decision, like, you're not who I want to move forward with in my life. And it is not this big, huge kerfuffle. It isn't this horrible betrayal kind of thing. It's just, we aren't moving in the same place. And our society doesn't really support a breakup like that. People want a reason that feels catastrophic. And when I hear that, I think it's pretty catastrophic to realize you've grown apart, and through a lot of communication, realize it's not gonna work. And some handle it very well, and some do not.
And those differences that cannot be reconciled, it's a very sad time from what I understand. And I've had friends who have said, listen, my ex-partner is still my best friend, but we just can't be together any longer. And that's got to be really tough. They just, the differences that they had, the way that their life evolved, and the conversation that they had probably with someone like yourself, a therapist, is such that it just doesn't matter, or if it mattered, they would still find a way to work through it, but they just cannot work out those differences. And it is pretty tragic, but life does go on. And particularly if there are children, whether the children are adult children or younger children, but if there are children involved, that's got to be challenging as well.
Yeah, and it also depends on the personality of the kids, because I've actually found in some ways, like a lot of people will say that, it's so sad when the kids are really young, and I think it's, I think it's hard no matter what age. But I've actually seen older kids have a harder time with their parents breaking up than younger kids, and I guess that's just kind of self-selection that it isn't across the board, but I think it really boils down to how do the parents handle their relationships, the change. And I'm thinking of my first husband. I knew that we were not, our lives were not going the directions that we wanted to both be. Like we really just were different people, and we really wanted different things in life. And the compromises that we were going to have to make in order for that to work were going to be huge compromises of our soul. But it was hard. It was hard to know. I wasn't, I didn't really know if that was, if I was making the right decision. It just felt right, and I went with what felt right. And fast forward many, many years, and we have a very good relationship, and we do holidays. We do a lot. We've done a very good job in our co-parenting relationship, and I would consider us friends. And I remember when he and his current wife, they live in Hawaii, and they live on a sailboat. And I remember the first time I visited them, and I could tell he was the happiest he's ever been, and in his life is retired and living on the sailboat with his wife, who I adore. And I stepped on the boat, and I was like, oh my God, I would never in my life, I wouldn't have let this happen. I would have absolutely stopped that, and I would have been miserable. And when I see how absolutely happy he is in life, I never could have foreseen it. It's not as if he was asking for a sailboat, or that detail was not even close to being in our minds when we divorced. But I thought, his happiness and seeing that was worth the hardship that we endured during the decision-making process, and every time that we made decisions to prioritize our friendship for our child, was worth it too. And that's a lot of what I do with couples that are trying to make a decision if they're going to stay together or not, is to helping them. I'm not a good advocate for divorce across the board, but I do think there are times that it really does serve people in a and I think that the stigma we put attached that we attach to it is harmful. But I know there's a lot of people that have different views as to why you shouldn't divorce, and I respect those differences. I think it's less about the decision to divorce and more about how do you go about it, and what commitment do you make to each other on the other side of it, especially if you have children. And I don't think we do nearly enough to support couples in figuring that out. And it's not just for the kids. And I will say that a lot when I'm working with couples, it's like it's for your life too. And we've talked about this study before that we know that the quality of a kid's life, this powerful study has shown that it is how, frankly, how the mother feels about her life makes an enormous difference whether she is married, or never been married, or divorced. And making decisions that are based in your happiness, and making and prioritizing relationships that do that make it, I think, make the biggest difference in our kids' life. And I wasn't surprised when that study came out. I'm just surprised it was published.
It does make sense because women tend to be the primary caregivers for their families. So, very important to remember that. But you make the decision. And now it's time to maybe you take a hiatus. Maybe you want to take a little breather, things shift. But had the conversation with the children, if you have children or the pets, because pets get attached to our partners as well. And now you're moving on. So now you're jumping into the deep end of the ocean, so to speak. And there is some, fear that exists about doing so, particularly if you've been in a committed relationship for a period of time, an extended period of time, and maybe you weren't good at dating in the first place. Raising hand, it was terrible dating. I can't even imagine being out there again. But yeah, so it's Liberation Day, so to speak.
It's, and I think it's such an interesting time in the world to be thinking about dating or partnering with somebody else. There are more options than ever, and more opinions than ever. And there's a lot of support to not date. There's a lot of support, especially in like, focusing on women, that like, do you really want to have somebody? Do you really want to look for another life partner? Is it best to be alone? Is it best to invest in friendships as opposed to romantic relationships? Or, the other side of that is like, should you just be out having great sex? Should you be looking for younger people? Should you be playing the field? I mean, there's just so many options, and I think in some ways there's a paralysis because of the options, but what I like, and this is when I'm working with clients that are in this position, I really like taking away all the noise and really sitting with the question of like, so who are you? Which I say a lot, like, really knowing who you are, and what do you want your life? And I like to ask, what do you want your life to feel like, instead of what do you want your life to be like? And when you're starting with feelings and how you're wanting it to feel, it can really lead you to a more powerful and rich answer than even just starting off with, who do you want? What kind of person do you want to be with? I also
Yeah,
think.
it's kind of like it is the hereafter conversation, because you're first defining, what are you here after? Who am I? What are you here after? Right? To figure out, do you really want to be with somebody? Who is that somebody? Is it a friend? Is it a female friend? Is it a male friend? Is it a combination of friends? Is it just friendship, or is it sex?
And to give yourself the room to have no wrong answer, or to guess, or, I love saying like, no thank you bites, like to try different things and see what feels right for you. That sometimes finding out what you don't want is incredibly powerful and tells you more of who you are than finding out who, like, what you do want. And I think it's not an easy time to be doing that when we have so many roles and, lots of things that are going on, that it's like, how do I, between grocery shopping and errands, or work stuff or kid stuff, depending on your life details, how do I sit there with the who am I? And I think it is it's a question that is, you almost have no business doing any of that if you're not asking yourself that question. And I think you don't have to have the exact answer, but I think you need to be, asking and being aware, like watching yourself, paying attention to yourself, to like, where are the places that you have triggers? Where are the places where you are the most vibrant in your life? Where are the places that you've ignored? What are the places that, like, one of my favorite things to do when I'm working with somebody who's dating is talk to me about your relationship with one of your closest friends. And let's, what is that? Like, what are the parts of that person that work for you? And what's missing in that? I think you can learn a lot about who you are through the friendships that you have that really work for you, not the ones that you've just kept, going in your life. I also think too that it's, we were talking about this earlier, that there is an interesting way of looking at dating right now, is in like, does dating, especially for heterosexual and a woman, does dating a man add value to your life? And if so, how? And what kind of man, what kind of characteristics does he need to have in order to add that value?
It's funny that you say that. So if you think about it, if there's a man out there, we'll just say this is we're talking about heterosexual relationships. There's a guy out there and he's never been married. The question that I would be asking myself, I've actually had this asked this question of some of my female friends who are going through the dating 2.0, like why hasn't he been married? Big question mark. Second one is, why is he no longer with his partner? Like, what is it? What's the dynamic there? So, red flags. Like, if he's never been married, is he someone that can't commit? Does he have such character flaws that He's impossible. Yes, he's sweet in the beginning during the courting phase, but then what emerges is this beast that can't be tolerated. So I've often asked friends of mine that are in this phase, where do you even go from there?
Yeah. With the way that, people, we move so much in our current day society, and we've got apps, that we have really lost the context of somebody unless you've been set up, or unless you have met that, you've been in their world for a long time. And I really wish that it was like policy, dating policy, that you talk to the last few people that they dated or married. And before you get in with somebody, to find out, just like an Amazon review. And although I think there's some problems with the websites that are, common right now, like, are you dating this man? Like, there's some good things and some not so good things about that. I wish that when you're dating somebody, you could talk to their ex, or if they have a couple, dating or whatever exes, that you could find out their perspective. Because I have had multiple people in my life that they, if they listened to the person they were dating, but the man, and heard their point of view, they had no other context outside of it. And then once they were in the thick of it, they're like, oh, I see why she said, when you told me about that fight and she said this, I see exactly why she said that. And I want to, I don't think that you need to know those past information in order to like stay away from all the red flags. I think everyone has red flags, but I think it gives you context for how much have they learned from the mistakes in the relationship. And it's the rare relationship that there isn't two sides to something not working out. Sometimes it is, but it's how much accountability they have. And it's the first thing that I, when I'm talking with clients, that I say for them to look for is when it gets to that point of talking about their past. Do they lead with accountability or do they lead with blame? And you should run if somebody leads with blame. And I work with my clients also on the other end that, and I said, this is how you describe your relationship and how it ended. And because, a lot of people, you're not ready to date if you are still in that place of a lot of blame towards the other person. And it's interesting. Like people will ask me, like, hey, how long should you wait after a breakup to date? And I really don't have a set answer, but it's my one of my litmus tests is how do you talk about your past, and what have you done about what you've learned about yourself? And that's something you should do for yourself, and it's certainly something you should be screening for in people that you're dating. And then I'd be curious to see what that Jesuit priest would say to this, because I find it to be in a similar vein. Which is, and I'll keep, with a heterosexual framing right now, is, if you're a heterosexual woman looking for to date a man, and particularly if you want to get married or get married again, is you want somebody who wants to be a husband, not somebody who wants a wife. And I think once you've been married, there are a lot of men who, the studies show that they date very quickly. Often, they get married much sooner than most women in the remarriage. And they their lives are better being married than being a single man, and so they want to get married, they want to have that life, they want to have a wife, but have they learned? Do they want what? And do they have the characteristics to be a good partner for a woman? And those are very different things.
It does make sense to me. It's interesting. Something that you said earlier about reference checking. We do more reference checking when we were trying to hire an individual to work for our businesses or for our practices than we do about somebody that we are going to spend the rest of our potentially could be spending the next phase of our life with. And
Yeah.
that's kind of scary.
Yeah.
And when you think about reference checking, it depends on. I mean, there is no Trustpilot for in the dating world, right? Trustpilot being you can't make this
Great.
stuff up. So in the dating world, there isn't anything like that. And if the person that you are contemplating dating is not from your community, doesn't
Yes.
go to your synagogue or church or your mosque or what have you, or doesn't have friends in common, then it's very challenging. But you're right about the red flags. There are a lot of fish in the ocean, but a lot of them stink. Or they want to find that woman who is the wife. So they're looking for a woman again, in the context of heterosexual relationships, these guys are looking for women who are significantly younger than they are because they want the wife. They don't want a partner. They want a wife, somebody that will stay home, that will do what they want them to do, someone that they can control. It's kind of scary.
Yeah. Well, and that's a very common story. And I hear it quite a bit, also. And what I hear too is, and I don't want to be, male bashing. I think there's a lot of great guys out there. And I do think there, and I work with guys as clients who are dating that are wanting to not be those kinds of guys too, that are really trying to take accountability and change. So I don't want to, just be, they're all terrible because they're not. But I think that we are really, I think women, especially women in their 50s who are single are having the consequences of men not having to grow and men fighting that. And not wanting to grow themselves, or it's too hard, or that we haven't given men enough spaces in which to even begin the process of self-discovery. And it's, one of the things that I thought too is that men who are truly like in recovery, those who have done the recovery program, are men that I say I think are very trustworthy. A lot of people don't feel that way about those who have had a history with addiction, and I understand that. But that's very different than a person who's in recovery, because a lot of the recovery programs require ruthless accountability, and not that accountability is going to for sure mean that you've changed, but I know you are not going to change unless you've been accountable. And when there's not a lot of framework in which, especially for men, to sit in accountability to learn about themselves so that they can change, men are not going to seek it. What they're going to seek is a woman who is easier. And usually a woman that is easier, and this is, again, I don't mean to be stereotyping everybody, it's not the case with all women, but oftentimes they have to go younger. Not just because of looks. That's what a lot of people think, is they want like a trophy wife, or they want someone who looks younger. And that's some of it for some men. But mainly what I see is they want a woman who hasn't gotten to a place in her life through perimenopause and menopause and just life in general, that she's the people pleasing has been taken out of her. And now she expects a man to be on his own and behaving and having high standards. And a lot of times a younger woman is going to be the easier option, not the better one. And that because she's easier and isn't requiring him to change, that's what he's choosing, instead of a woman who is saying, no, I expect you to be accountable to your behavior and to change it. And again, this is not across the board, but it's a pretty common trend.
So, in terms of dating 2.0, in the context of hereafter, also looking at the vetting process, but trying to ascertain who is it that this person has been attracted to in the past? Who has he dated? Is he dating? Does he tend to date women who are 10 years younger than you? Does he tend to date women that are older? Does he tend to date professional women? So, maybe getting a sense of what is the composition of his prior dating history and if he's come from a relationship, how quickly has he jumped into the deep end of the ocean, so to speak, with you? So I think about that. Then I think about the whole concept of you're dating, maybe you haven't had sex, maybe he wants to have sex. So let's talk about sex because that's a very important part of our lives, right? So sex and sexuality. But when you're entering a new relationship, what are your thoughts on giving some guidance along those lines?
Well, I'm sure you can predict that I'm going to say that it's different for everybody, and that I don't think there's is just one answer to it. But I do think that if who you are as a sexual being, and if you want to have a sexual connection as a part of your life moving forward, that if you've dated, if you've been married, that it's often going to happen sooner than when you're younger, although sometimes that happens really soon too. I recommend trying out the equipment and seeing what it's like for you and for the other person as well. And I don't think that it has to be the first date, or it could be when you feel ready to experience that. But I think it's a huge part of it. And especially as you get older, that you want to know what kind of what kind of sex you all both want to be having. And I have heard the gamut of what that answer is. I know some people that when they're in their 50s, they're like, I have a list and I want to try everything that I didn't do because I was in a marriage that we couldn't do these things. And so I want somebody who's going to be very adventurous. Others who are like, I have had a sexless marriage and I just want, like someone who loves me and I want to make love and, I just want to feel wanted again. Others who are like, wow, I'm older and I don't know if it, I don't know if it doesn't feel the same way for me. It's not nearly as much of a priority. So I want somebody that it's not the biggest priority for our relationship. Our friendship is more important. But I think it's, it also shows that the 40s and 50s on up generation is that we are a generation that we weren't given good sex education. We're going to see this again for the generations now because they're getting it even worse. And we aren't just because, like, if you are coming from a long-term relationship, depending on what kind of communication style you had, especially in your sexual life, you may still have had, even though you were having sex, you had one sexual partners, you may not have gained communication skills about sex, and you need to gain them quickly. I have with my clients, we talk about we really will role play how to say, I want you to use a condom because it's been so long since they've had that kind of discussion and how to advocate for yourself and for your own health needs. And if again, if you're dating somebody in their 50s and you're a heterosexual woman dating a man, a lot of men don't want to wear a condom because they have a hard time keeping an erection, and they know, or they're very used to not having to wear a condom, and they know it feels different for them. And having a woman that says, "Well, we're not having sex then," can be very inconvenient for some. And so a woman really needs to be able to stand on her own and do that. I also have women go and buy condoms too, just to get used to it and to kind of break that down, that barrier down as well. And then I think it's also like there's some beautiful things about knowing your body a lot. Not this isn't for every woman, but a lot of women do know their body better, and they know what feels good and what doesn't, and they have learned the communication skills to say that. And so they're able to have a better and higher quality sex because they practice that. And that's exciting, also. I've seen it all, and it's not as dismal as it may seem in some articles, as well.
You know, it's back to the hereafter, right?
Yes, right.
So it's you have to have your checklist. If you know, what are you hereafter? So in the context of sex and sexuality, what are you hereafter? As you just illustrated, are you here for a loving relationship that includes sex and a lot of it occasionally? What kind of sex are you interested in? Are you willing to protect me and to protect yourself? It doesn't matter whether you were in that 25, 30-year relationship and it was monogamous. We're in a new relationship, and I feel comfortable being protected. And the way I feel protected is by having my male partner use a condom. So all those things are part of that hereafter conversation. And as you said, not that dismal, because let's face it, let's say that you are dating someone and they're not hereafter what you're hereafter. Isn't it better that you're here after they're gone?
Yes,
Just to
exactly.
bring it back full circle. And you know, I know I'm chuckling, but now you get to make this is about agency. It's coming back to agency. It's about you making those decisions for yourself about the way you want the rest of your life. And part of that is getting to say no and living with that consequence of saying no. And that's okay.
Yes, and learning how to say no. Like I taught a sex ed class to middle schoolers in October, and one of the sections that we did is we went through different scenarios, and they had to practice how they would say no to, in this scenario, and then we switched it, and it was how do you receive a no. And it was so interesting because I've also done that with adults, and these kids did such a better job of accepting people's no's. And I walked out having so much hope for this for that generation, of compared to the way that our generation just we weren't taught consent. We were not taught how to accept people's no's outside of sex too. And knowing how to, again, we've been saying this a lot, but I know that when I work with somebody and we learn the concept of agency. They make decisions that are so much better for themselves. And when people know themselves and make decisions that serve who they are, then it is a positive effect once they've done the clearing of those who don't serve them. You're a happier, more fulfilled person, and you're making better, and you just have the snowballing effect of making better decisions. And when people make better decisions on their sexual lives, of their relationships, their friendships, their work, we and the ripple effects happen to other people. We have people who are not hurting other people, that they are not in pain and walking around with open wounds. They are creating a life that is meant for them. And when you do that, a lot of things change. And it begins with deciding it matters, that you prioritize knowing the truth of you and how to back that truth up.
It's great advice. And ex how a person accepts a no is probably a good indication of whether you chose well or you didn't choose well. And by the way, there's always if in the context of getting a no means that your relationship changes from one that includes sex to one that's just a friendship, maybe that's not all bad.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And why does it have to be tra why do no's have to be so tragic? And it's the way, like I use the word dignity a lot. And when I'm talking about couples ending or saying no to somebody, like why does when a relationship completes itself and when there's an ending to it, why does it have to be this huge big thing? Or why do people have to avoid the hard conversations? Like why can't we do this with dignity with each other and say it matters that we met and it matters that we're parting. And I think people would there's a snowballing effect in the negative of when you've been hurt or when you've had people not end things in a positive or in a healthy way. It makes people afraid of no's and receiving no's too. People want to get ahead of the no, so that they can prevent the or think they can prevent the hurt. I want to get back to something that you said earlier too, and it made me think of a client who has given me permission to share this. And I may have said this to you at a different time, but I work with couples, and even like when they're a couple, I'll have them do a list of what they need in a partner, and I do it with people who are single and are wanting to date, and I have this whole exercise that I do with them, and once we have the list, I teach them how to look for these qualities in the people that they're dating or meeting.
Never really thought about it in the context of a relationship. There you go. It makes sense.
Yeah.
So I want to ask you three tips for dating 2.0. What are your three tips?
So I want you to ask yourself the question, how do I want to feel? How do I want to feel? And I want you to have at least five feelings of what do you want to feel like if you have somebody that you are sharing yourself with? Meaning like even just sharing your stories, your history and experience, whatever. Like, well, how do you want it to feel? The next tip is I want you to open up the possibility of what kind of person this could look like. Like, don't go with your type. Like my friends used to have a joke. I've gotten over it, but if a guy wore a beanie, they knew that I was going to be interested in them, which is a very reductive joke thing. But I liked an interesting person, and to me, that just kind of that was like my body just had a reaction to it. And then when I would meet somebody who didn't have a beanie, wouldn't wear a beanie, or didn't have that interesting thing, my body just automatically ruled them out. And I know that I've missed out on some wonderful people because I stayed in my type, because I stayed with what it felt attracted instead of understanding the science behind it, which was I just had made neural pathways. It wasn't as if I couldn't experience connection and attraction to a different type. I just had very grooved in neural pathways. So learning to have new neural pathways and trying it and trying to see what attraction is a really important thing. And I will say to every single person that is dating that I work with, have you thought of same gender? And I just ask the question. One, because they may have, and they're just afraid to say it, or they haven't thought of it, and they're like, huh. And some people are like, no, absolutely not. And others are like, I hadn't, but maybe I will. And so it's think of all different kinds of differences. And then the third is, I really would consider the modern kinds of references. I really, I definitely understand why people use apps. I'm not a huge fan of them, and I think that it is crucial if you are using apps or if you're meeting somebody with outside of a context that you meet their context quickly if you're interested in them. So you need to meet friends. You need to meet, like, be around their work environment. You need to see them in the truth of who they are and how people respond to them, how people talk about them. There's actually an episode of Love is Blind that I thought did a really good job, and they sensationalized it, of course. But a couple after they'd chosen each other, they had, like, a dinner with his friends, and she went to the bathroom with his best friend's girlfriend. And the girlfriend said, "Well, you need to know this, 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 and this about him." And that none of that had come out. It had all been curated, and it made an enormous difference on her. And she ended up not choosing him because that information alone made a big difference. And again, it's TV, so there's that. But I think there's real life versions of that happen a lot too. Can I give two more? Can I give more than
Sure.
three?
If you have two more, that's great.
The fourth is, and this is something that my mother said to me that when I was young and petulant, I didn't take to heed, but she's correct, and it has remained correct, which is, when you're dating, that's when people show their best selves. So if you are seeing things that do not work for you or that you are not impressed by, say no and move on. Move on. And if you have to have a line in your notes app on your phone, if whatever it is, you don't need a big explanation as well. You just move on, because women, no matter what age they are, have a tendency to stay with potential instead of what's right in front of them, and it is a mistake no matter what age. And then the last is, while you're in the dating process, you have to continue to date yourself. You have to continue to have a life that dating adds to, not is you're miserable unless you have somebody in your life. And I get the most resistance on this than anything else, especially when I'm working with clients who are in their 30s. That is, like, mission, find a partner, find a life partner. I was like, "Well, you have to have a life on top of this, or it has to be the foundational life." And a lot of times dating takes over. And so don't lose your life in the truth of you, while you're in the process of dating.
These are really great tips. And this is probably not the last time we're going to talk about dating 2.0 because there's a lot to talk about. And if you want to learn more, and you want to gain a little bit more insight from Dr. Julianacy, I have the book here again,
Oh,
A New
great.
Position on Sex. Order it wherever you get your books, Amazon, Goodreads, what have you. But A New Position on Sex, you could tell that I have
I know,
flagged some
I love
chapters, see the little
that. We're
flag.
gonna tab. That's great.
Dr. Juliana Hauser, it's always a pleasure to have you on the Love Mia Vita podcast. And for those of you that are listening in, check out some of our other Love Mia Vita podcasts with Dr. Juliana Hauser and other medical advisory council members, of which Dr. Juliana is a key member. So thank you once again. Love Mia Vita.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on the Love Mia Vita podcast. Love Mia Vita means love my life, and that is a mantra we should all live by. Please like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and remember to follow us on social media and on fempharma.com. Thank you and be well.